Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Doug, welcome.
Good to be here, and it's always good to have opening week, but I think anytime you have as many new coaches as we do, a lot of the fan base in this area have new coaches at whichever school they particularly root for. Particularly if you're in the Southeastern Conference fan, you got about a 50% chance that you got a new head coach at your program. So good to start.
Well, and with Tennessee, it's not like they're starting with Bethel this week. Also at home, they've got a big ball game against West Virginia. Take us through what this week is like from a program standpoint when you flip that switch and it's game week all of a sudden and you're in preparation for your opponent. How does that up the ante on everything for a coach and a player?
Well, you notice it first on the practice field. The players know it more than you do, particularly if you've been coaching for a while. They know it's game week, and you see a little extra bounce in their step. Almost always school has started, so all of the students are back in. All the girls are asking them how good they're going to be this year. So they're ready to go play. But, you know, from a coaching perspective, what you want to do this week is you want to get right into that routine that you're going to have for the next, 12 or 13 weeks with an open date. What you do on Monday, everybody knows what time it is, where they're supposed to be, where it becomes routine, where, you know, if you're a player, you get up on a Wednesday, you know what's going to happen on Wednesday. And that's the routine that Tennessee's been in. Coach Pruitt actually started, most coaches do this, they started the first game prep probably last Thursday, maybe even Wednesday, but then they start it back up again on Monday, just like you would do a normal Monday through the football season.
Doug, how much of an advantage does Tennessee have for this one time where there's nothing on tape? If Helton, you know, if they want to find out what Helton did, they can go watch USC, but he wasn't 100% behind what was going on there. Pruitt was at Bama, and you've detailed the system you expect to see defensively. But how much of an advantage does Tennessee have in at least one quarter or two quarters thanks to the unknowns?
I think there's a big advantage in a couple of areas. Number one, now, from a scheme standpoint, West Virginia offensively knows what Tennessee's going to do on defense. It's what Coach Pruitt, he's calling the plays. It's his defense. All the guys that are working on that side of the ball have ran this defense, mm-hmm. So they know what's going to happen there. But what they don't know is there's and it had a lot to do with injuries and new players coming in. There's probably going to be 7 or 8, maybe as many as 10 players that West Virginia will not be able to see on tape from last year because they either were injured, like Jawadden Jennings got hurt the 7th play of the game, or Darren Kirkland was out all year, or Shy Tuttle wasn't really up to speed much of the year. And then you add the transfers that have come in there, both junior college and grad transfers. A big difference there. Offensively, I don't know what we're going to do on offense. And I think that's the question. You can see the people that are playing, but listen, this head coach, I think, is going to probably try to run the ball a good bit, but how's he going to do it? Are we going to get a lot of I formation? We know we're going to get some. Are we going to get a little bit? Are they going to spread the field? The unknowns are on from West Virginia's standpoint, or on what Tennessee will do offensively. They know what's going to happen on defense. Probably know a lot of the calls, quite frankly.
You had said that you did not expect an inexperienced guy to be one of the cornerbacks. Looks like an inexperienced guy is going to be one of the cornerbacks.
Going to be it looks like, and I think without question, Alante Taylor is going to start at one cornerback. Buchanan will start at the other. And I think, Paul, probably at least 3 freshmen will be in that 10-man defensive rotation back there in secondary. Remember,
remind us why you didn't think a freshman corner was going to happen, and tell us why you think it is.
I did not think coming into this first game he would want to play in a first game against a high-powered offense. Listen, West Virginia, if they have the ball enough, they'll throw 65, 70, 75 passes in this game. That was why. And I think what this clearly shows is now Alante Taylor was there last spring. That gives him a leg up. He is also very talented. But really it tells me more about Osborne than it does about Taylor. I don't think they were just comfortable with Osborne being a starter in this ballgame. They got the oars, all the oars in there. But Alante Taylor's going to be if he doesn't start, he'll be in there probably the second or third play. And there's no use to, I don't think this head coach's going to play that game about, okay, you're a starter because you've been here or whatever. So, but that's the question is without question on the defensive side of the ball, the question is, can this group of corners hold up against what will be the best passing attack that Tennessee will see? You got two wide receivers on this team that between them caught about 150 balls last year. One of them caught 18 touchdown passes, the Seals youngster. So that's where the pressure is going to be defensively, without question.
When you look at all the unknowns for Tennessee that we talked about, all the guys coming back from injury, but also with the two deep that they released, you've got between 15 and 20 guys, and especially if you go to the third string, that weren't even in the program a year ago that could play this year. What does that do for a team in terms of being able to surprise some people and just for the fans watching, not really knowing what to expect because you have so many new guys that are going to play?
Well, you look at it, I believe they had 10 either junior college transfers or grad transfers come in the program. 7, I think, junior college and 3 grad transfers. And you look at that group, I think there's a good chance that 3 or 4 of them will start, and probably maybe all 10 of them will play extensively. And it brings veteran leadership in, not leadership of knowing the program that well. I think the one guy there that probably Coach Pruitt has really leaned on a lot in that group is Brandon Kennedy, because, of course, he was at Alabama, The work ethic type thing, I think, is what Coach Pruitt brought him in for. Plus, he'll be the starter to either center or guard. I'm sure it's center this first ball game.
615-737-1045. Game week has arrived. College football season is here. Let's all rejoice together. If you've got a question about Tennessee, West Virginia, let us know. 615-737-1045. 737-1045. When you look up and down both rosters, and I'm not going to look just at recruiting rankings, but just overall talent, physical talent, Tennessee versus West Virginia. Outside of, and this is a big if, but outside of quarterback, who's a Heisman Trophy candidate, and two great wide receivers, you could make an argument for pretty much Tennessee at every other position on the field that they have more talent at that position. Yet Tennessee's a 10-point underdog coming into this game. Do you think Tennessee has the right to have a little bit of confidence going into this matchup, knowing the physical talent they have?
Well, I think they will have a lot of confidence because I believe that they will really, talking about the players, believe in the game plan, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, that Tennessee's going to employ. If this staff does the job that they should do, and I have no reason to think that they won't, they're going to put a game plan in that's going to be specially fitted to what can we do against their defense or against their offense. And I think particularly on the offensive side of the ball, listen, as good and as explosive as West Virginia is on offense, and they are just the opposite of that, or close to the opposite of that on defense. They give up a lot of yards. They give up a lot of points. And that's, I think, Tennessee's winning edge on this. You know, talking about, and even at the quarterback position, it's what you do with a quarterback. There's no question. We've seen Will Grier when he was an outstanding player at Florida, what, 2-3 years ago now. But it's what you ask him to do. Tennessee's not going to ask Garantano and or Crist to do what West Virginia is going to ask Will Grier to do, and I think that's the big difference. And you can win with all different types of quarterbacks. You just have to build around them.
Jeremy Pruitt did an interview recently, and he was asked about how does it feel to be the 5th, 6th, 7th option at Tennessee, and I thought he had a great response. He said, I was Philip Fulmer's first choice, and that's all that matters to me. What do you think about that as the answer? Because that's who the guy he's working for now.
I'd like to know if he had thought about that answer before.
I would think he probably had. Yeah.
But if he did, fine. If he didn't, fine. He's exactly right. Listen, one thing that Philip brought with him was, Philip's the only, they could not have hired another athletic director that could have signed or hired an assistant football coach that had never had any head coaching experience. There's not another athletic
director.
That's
a great point.
There's not another athletic director out there that could do that. Philip could, and you know what? Everybody accepted it because they're, one of the things that's happened at Tennessee that I have seen everywhere is with Tennessee people, they're comfortable with the fact that, hey, Philip might not make the choice that I'm talking about. I'm talking about if I'm just a fan. But I know this, he's going to make a choice that he believes is in the best interest of the University of Tennessee and this athletic program. That's all you can ask for. I don't know if he was his first choice. I would say he is his co-first choice. I think it was going to either be Kevin Steele or Jeremy Pruitt from the get-go, and he ended up going with Jeremy Pruitt, probably for some reasons that he'll keep to himself.
Catch Doug Matthews for Forklift Systems Football Saturday every Saturday morning, 9 to 11. 11 a.m. right here on The Zone every Saturday, coach to coach with Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis, hosted by Larry Stone. And then the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee football happens with Big Orange Sunday, recapping Saturday's game against West Virginia. Doug Matthews in studio with us. He spent 10 seasons as either the running backs coach or the defensive coordinator at the University of Tennessee. His coaching career back in the early, it began, I believe, in the early 70s, if I'm not mistaken. And how long have you been doing the show?
This show?
No, not this show. The On the Zone.
The first week they were here. What is that, 15 years now?
Yeah, 15 years.
Whatever that is. Big Orange Sunday, 25 years. That started okay. WLAC right down the road by great buddy, deceased buddy Bob Bell, and I started it. A lot of fun times.
615-737-1045, our number. Let's go to the phones. You can jump to the front of the line with a question for Doug Matthews. Mark, lead us off. How's it going?
Hi, pretty good. I just want to say I'm a big fan of the show, and I appreciate you having me on today. But I'm kind of curious about, I mean, I know Tennessee, you know, we're pretty much starting over, or, you know, with a new coach and everything. But, I mean, do we really have a legitimate shot of actually winning this weekend against West Virginia and them having a Heisman quarterback? I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, he's a preseason All-American number one quarterback. I don't think he's in the Heisman race right now, but he well could be. Absolutely. I think Tennessee matches up extremely well. If you got to play a top, he's top 10, they're top 10, I think, one poll. Let's say a top 25 team. This is a good team to start with. If you're going to have to play one, I mean, I'd probably like to play somebody that's who they're going to be playing the second game, but absolutely. And I think Tennessee, I really believe from looking at both teams, and I've looked at both teams, I think Tennessee has as good a chance of winning this game as West Virginia. That's my opinion. A lot of people probably don't share that, but I believe Tennessee has an excellent chance of winning this ball game. Would not surprise me at all if Tennessee won.
Let's go back to the freshman starting at corner, Alante Taylor, and it says, or Bryce Thompson, I think, who's also going to play a lot in this game. Did you ever worry about hurting a freshman player or a young player psychologically? Because this is the type of game where Alante Taylor could get absolutely exposed if West Virginia plays this right. And it's his first time playing defensive back, playing this position. He was a high school quarterback. Did you ever take that in consideration as a coach? Do you think these coaches even think about that for 1 second?
Well, it's a different world now. I never, ever was around where we played a freshman. We redshirted every freshman. We redshirted Reggie Cobb and Carl Pickens and Alvin Harper and Harry Galbraith and Chuck Webb. Everybody redshirted back then. We didn't play freshmen. And if we did, it was later in the year. But, you know, young men these days, and you all have seen it, if you go back even in early high school, these 7-on-7 camps or groups that play, they come in expecting to play now. And coaches know that if they're real good, you're only going to have them 3 years, whether you redshirt them or not, so they're going to play them now. I don't think Coach Pruitt does at all, particularly the good thing about where those freshmen are going to play are going to be on the defensive secondary, particularly the cornerback position, and that's what he coaches. So I'm sure that he will be careful what position he puts them in. When they're playing man coverage, they may play, instead of a lot of bump press man-to-man, they may play a little bit off, you know, occasionally just to see what's happening on it. But eventually, if you're going to play cornerback up there, you're going to be probably 20, 25 plays a game where you're going to be locked up one-on-one with a really good wide receiver, because including West Virginia, everybody in this league has good wide receivers.
Well, and it's such a vote of confidence for the reason you just said, Coach, because of the specialty of Jeremy Pruitt and what he coaches, to trust a freshman that hasn't really played defensive back before says a lot about what he thinks about Alante Taylor, but it also says about a lack of faith he may have in some of the older guys on the roster. And I would also think that if you're making this decision against West Virginia, you know they're going to throw it 60-plus times probably in this game. He's also giving a vote of confidence for the type of person and competitor that Alante Taylor is, that knowing that he's not going to be affected even if he gets shredded in this game.
Well, and I think some of the guys, Osborne's a good example. Osborne, I think, would be an excellent, Markel Osborne would be an excellent zone cornerback. And while Tennessee will certainly play some zone, their base is man, and their zone coverage actually becomes matchup. It's kind of like a matchup zone in basketball. You really match up and play a lot of man in that also. So ideally, he would not like to, I'm sure, would not like to have to play freshman. But the fact of the matter is, on this team coming, whoever was going to coach this team, there were not much depth at cornerbacks, and there wasn't a whole lot of talent, Southeastern Conference talent at cornerback on this team.
Sterling is our next guest. Hey, Sterling.
How are you all doing?
Great.
I wanted to ask about, I have a strategy. I was watching the 85 Auburn game, 85, not Auburn game, but the 85 Sugar Bowl. And Tennessee just went absolutely crazy with blitzes. And they had lost two cornerbacks when that happened. I'm sure Coach Matthews knows all about that. But do you think, and the offensive line for West Virginia is approximately 320 pounds a man, and we're a lot lighter than that. But do you think that they're going to try and just do a blitz bomber in that game and try and just do everything they can just to go after the quarterback and forget about worrying about the run?
I believe they'll go in with a game plan first of not doing that. Here is the problem, or maybe an opportunity on the other side against West Virginia. Going back to the 85 game real quick, Testa Verde held the ball a long time. You get to him. West Virginia's offense, I'm going to say a good 15 to 20% of the passes are thrown behind the line of scrimmage. So they get that ball out of there quick. They got that little
blitzing touch. Doesn't help you.
It's very difficult to get there. Now, it helps you because the one thing, you know, you'll hear people say, well, don't blitz because you can't get there. But here's what it does do. That ball comes out of there quick. So you can squeeze those, you know, you don't have to worry about a 40-yard takeoff route down the field. That's one way to do it. I will say this, though. This head coach, as a coordinator at every place he was, he likes to bring outside pressure. Outside pressure. Nickelback. Cornerback, if it's to the weak side, outside linebackers, and maybe an inside linebacker to that side, or a safety. He loves to bring pressure.
Minka Fitzpatrick, for instance.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, I wouldn't look at how many times Tennessee got sacks, because I don't think they'll get many. I don't think many people. I think I'm right on this. I looked at the stat. All of last year, I think West Virginia only gave up 17 sacks. Now, they were throwing over 50 passes a game. So, but hurries, getting the ball out of there, you know, particularly if it's third down and maybe 10, 7, 8, 9, 10, where you can make them throw a 3 or 5 yard route, get them on the ground, make them punt. You'll see pressure, but I don't think it's going to be pressure to get sacks. It may get some of them, but it's more to get sacks. I mean, it's more to get pressure than it is to get sacks.
He brought up the 85 Sugar Bowl, so what the heck? I'll ask about it. Were you guys confident as a staff that you felt like that was going to happen in that game? Because it surprised everyone else to see how Tennessee just dominated the game.
It did not at all, because remembering that.
Did not surprise you at all?
No, not at all. Remember that game. Once Darryl Dickey got locked in after Tony got hurt down, Robinson got hurt down at Alabama, you know, that team, we had two ties in that team. UCLA the first game of the year, and Georgia Tech after the Alabama game when Tony got hurt and we weren't exactly sure what we were going to do. By the way, both the teams we tied that year won their conference. And then we had a loss to Florida. We were a better football team. They probably had more talent in some areas, but we had a lot of really good football players. And what helped so much in that game that Tennessee won't have this week, and if you were anybody in that game will remember this, it was inside, and there was a – if that place seats 80,000, 79,000 of them were Tennessee fans, and it was loud, and Miami had a lot of trouble getting in and out of plays.
Let's go next to Jeff, who wants to discuss this Vols crowd on Saturday. Hey, Jeff.
How y'all doing?
Great, Jeff.
Hey, man. Cup show's killer as always. Paul, I've got my kids yelling at my wife in Nashville now, not to block the pot. So
sweet.
Accomplished there. Hey, also, guys, I was going to ask you, Coach Doug, what do you think the percentage will be? Will it be 50-50 West Virginia Tennessee fans at this game, or do you think there'll be more orange there? And I guess the only other question I had is how often do you think we'll utilize Dominic Woods Anderson? I've heard he is a specimen of a tight end. And I'll hang up and listen to you guys. I love the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
Well, I could probably answer the latter of those two more so than the first. I think you're going to see a lot of Wood Anderson, and I think West Virginia is going to see a lot of him. This guy is the first really online blocking tight end. I know Rivera was there, but since Jason Witten. That has the size 260. I'm going to say he probably runs a 4.7. May run a little better than that. May run a little slower than that. Big physical guy. I think you'll see a lot of him from a blocking perspective. Listen, Tennessee's going to run the ball in this game. They got a big mismatch. That's their strength. They got physical wide receivers that can go block you. So I think you're going to see a lot of Wood Anderson. Crowd, I don't know. I know that Tennessee sold the allotment that they had to sell. But I have no idea. West Virginia is gonna they follow their team awfully well too, and I would think the West Virginia group thinks they're looking for a Big 8 champion or a Big 12 championship.
Is this a sellout?
I don't know, honestly. Okay. I wouldn't expect it. I think it'll be pretty close. I know that West Virginia's AD yesterday speculated that he thinks it'll be 60-40 West Virginia fans. I would be surprised if that was the case. I think there will be more orange there, but I think it'll be close. I don't think it's going to be overwhelming.
Well, games like this, neutral site games, it means nothing. It really doesn't mean that much at home anymore, quite frankly. Everybody now plays away to big crowds. I don't care where you go in the SEC or if you're a Power 5 conference team and you go on the road, you're going to play in front of loud, noisy crowds. So, they got to get used to it sometime. Might as well get used to it. Then I can promise you it's going to be pretty loud in Athens, what, the fifth ball game of the year.
Doug, neutral site, advantage or disadvantage for this type of situation for this Tennessee locker room? Because, look, Alabama neutral site game really doesn't matter. But for Tennessee, they get away from distraction, maybe a bit more focused. You bus in for Tennessee. You travel in together to Charlotte. If you're going to play West Virginia, could it be that you almost like this setting more than the alternatives?
Well, you certainly like it better than playing there. Where is West Virginia?
Morgantown.
Morgantown, yeah. Played several games up there. But it's, I think it's a disadvantage simply from this standpoint. New team, new staff, new way of calling, defenses and verbiage, terminology. I think you'd like to be at home. But, the other side on the at-home thing that gets – it's great at home if you're the offense. It's not so good if you're the defense, because when you're the home defense, that's when all the noise is. So one side of the ball is not going to be able to hear very well or communicate very well. And I think that's the biggest thing, and this goes back from experience. The biggest thing that a new staff has – I don't care how long they've all coached or how long they've known each other – the communication part of it. And you can bet that's one thing that this week, that probably today, tomorrow, and maybe even Friday, if they do much on Friday, substitutions in and out of a ball game. What does this mean? Making sure you're all on the same page. That's the biggest problem that you have early. And how many times in early games do we see we got to use a timeout because, John ain't in the game. We got to do or we got too many players on the field. So substitutions, you go over and over and over again. particularly when you're playing a fast-paced offense that will have a bunch of no huddle in there. You got to get those guys in and out and know when you can go in and when you can't go in.
Fred has been waiting patiently. He's next up. Go right ahead, Fred.
Hey, guys. Listen to the show every day. Love it. And, Doug, I always love your segments when you're on. I sure do.
Well, thank you.
I've been waiting for this game for over 20 years, living in Nashville since the 90s and going to Lipscomb. But
are you a West Virginia fan?
Yes, sir. Grew up there. And Doug, best of luck the rest of the year.
Well, I can let me throw that right back at you.
I appreciate that. I truly mean it. Three quick things I was just going to point out. I've been listening all week. Like I said, I'm as jacked as anybody about this weekend. But this is not the same defense as last year. Now, y'all could come out and run for 300 yards. I don't know. But they've been addressing this since the day after the bowl game. We've added two grad transfers, Kenny Bigelow from USC and Jabril Robinson from Clemson, both six-year guys.
He's back.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. We lost you for a second.
Oh, okay. And then we got a linebacker, David Long, that spent half of last year injured. And he take this for what it's worth, being in the Big 12 and defense. But he's one of your best linebackers in the Big 12. So I really think we're going to have a lot better defense than what people are giving us credit for this year. And then we lost Justin Crawford at running back. We got four guys that they're comfortable putting any one of them in there. Of course, Kennedy McCoy did a real good job last year. And Alex Sinkfield, redshirt freshman, was it 2 months ago, ESPN picked as the most exciting player on the team, and he's never played a down in college.
Fred, thank you for the call. Doug, when it comes to the run game for Tennessee, you've said in the past they want to run it a lot. If they can run it 70% of the time, they'll do that, right?
I would think that that they would like to in this ball game. Now, what determines that? The score.
The score determines it.
If they can keep the score manageable defensively. Let me just say this, and this is what sometimes gets missed, that regardless of how good you are, how many players you are, and both sides are going to have this in opposite ways. What does West Virginia's defense see every single day in practice, in spring practice and fall practice? Do they see teams that are going to line up and come off that football and try to knock you off ball? No. They see linemen who are backing up, throwing the ball. So they get very good at coverages and pass rush. But they don't have anybody hitting them, as we would say, they don't do that anymore, hitting them in the mouth. Now, Tennessee has the problem the other way. Tennessee, in practice, is not going to see four or five wides, guys that can run, catch, quarterbacks that can get that ball out quick, where you have to pass rush. They don't see that. But where West Virginia and Tennessee's only chance is to be able to run the football successfully, They're going to give up points. They know that, but to play good, solid defensive tackling, I tell you, I wish I'd have heard this line. I heard Coach Vrabel say this the other day. He was talking about after the last ball game. He said one of the good things came out of it defensively was we had single digit missed tackles, and I'd never thought about it like that. You always work on missed tackles, but you know, if you can keep missed tackles to a minimum, get them on the ground, you know, don't let them turn a 5-yard play into a 10, 20, 30-yard play. That's how you win against a team like this. You have to have patience. You have to know when to come get them. You have to get your hands up on defense. You got to count on some overthrows and maybe some bad throws. You're not going to confuse this guy in all likelihood. But getting back to the original question, Tennessee's chance, big chance, is running the ball on offense. And if we, as an offense, keep the ball, you're not going to be running 80 plays. You're not going to have the football. So that's why it's so key for Tennessee to be able to run the football.
Go back to what you told us last week about how teams that are not known for running the football ran it well against West Virginia.
Well, Oklahoma. Now, Oklahoma runs a little bit different running attack. Oklahoma last year scored 59 points in three quarters and rushed for 350 yards. Oklahoma did. Now, if you didn't see Oklahoma play a whole lot, they had some really good running backs, but that wasn't their what they did. Oklahoma State ran for 250 yards. So, again, I don't know how good Tennessee's going to be running the football, but I know that's what they want to do, and I think they're going to be really good at running it.
Neutral site games and the opponents for certain teams. What do you think across the conference?
Well, if you look at it, number one, I particularly, as a fan, love neutral site games. I think coaches and athletic directors now are starting to get a little leery of them. They've been great for the Southeastern Conference because the first thing you see at the first of the year is normally a Chick-fil-A game or a neutral site game, and the Southeastern Conference has kind of dominated those as far as having teams in there. The last thing you've seen the last most of the years is an SEC team holding the trophy up, so you kind of begin and end with that. But you look at it, boy, just some huge ball games. Listen, LSU-Miami, I think this is a huge game for both teams. I think probably much more so for Ed Orgeron. But you win this game, all of a sudden now you got some confidence. I don't know how good either one of these teams are. Miami may be a little bit overrated, maybe. But you win this game, suddenly, boy, you that next week's practice is really great because we pretty good. Michigan, Notre Dame. Either one, you're talking about digging out of a hole.
Yeah.
You know, this is it's a big game anyway to start the year off of that. Auburn, Washington. Both of these teams think they have an opportunity. If things go well, they got the opportunity to be in the playoffs. You lose this ball game, you ain't going to lose another one the rest of the year.
Only two top 10 teams playing each other this weekend too, Auburn and Washington.
And I think will be an excellent game. It's I don't know that much about Washington. I'm going a lot off of what Coach Peterson has done. Certainly they got a quarterback that can throw it around, but you got to have more than a quarterback that can throw it around. So I think I like them personally. I think they really kick off the season well. How much excitement have we had with the playoffs being changed at the end of the year and then these kickoff classics where we see, and games that aren't kickoff classics, quality teams playing early really gets the season started well.
Doug, from this standpoint, last year I'm sitting around like the 45-yard line at Floyd Stadium watching Vanderbilt at MTSU. And from like the first two or three plays, I knew it was going to be a long night because Vanderbilt was blowing them off the line of scrimmage easily. How do you counteract that if you're MTSU? Because you don't recruit to that in 12 months.
Yeah, we were talking yesterday about how it'd be unreasonable to expect different.
Well, first off, the big difference in an MTSU, and Coach Stockstill has done a great job over there, but it is so difficult to recruit defensive linemen at any level school like that. It's difficult for some Power 5 conference schools to recruit another one. That's number one. Usually you have a big mismatch in the defensive line position. And secondly, you normally have a mismatch in depth, good quality depth. I don't know about MTSU this year. I get the feeling that maybe they're not quite as talented overall, and look at some of the guys that have gone on and been excellent pro players. But they got a quarterback who is as good at what they do as anybody in the country. And I think it's going to be a question that has to be answered again this year, Jonathan, is can MTSU run the ball enough against Vanderbilt's defense to keep their team offense on the field? And I don't know, I just kind of get a feeling maybe this isn't one of Coach Stockstill's better teams from a talent standpoint.
And they did a good job defensively. They did okay stopping the Vanderbilt rushing attack, but it was Shermer and Lipscomb, and I mean, it was pitch and catch, and it was because the offensive line for Vandy gave Shermer tons of time.
Here's what happens. It's the old, what we used to call Fisher cut bait. You either got to, you know, you can't stop normally. You can't stop both. So do I want to make them throw? Do I want to make them run? I'm going to say last year going into that game, MTSU probably felt like they had to stop the running game. Well, when you do that, you commit enough players up there, you got problems You got problems going, on the other side of it.
Looking forward to watching Keyshawn Vaughn former Pearl Cone running back in this game who transferred from Illinois, who will be the starter for Vanderbilt. Feels like a big game to set the tone for this season for Derek Mason and Vanderbilt. That not one, obviously, you don't want to drop the opener, but especially to MTSU if you're Vandy.
Well, how do you get to a bowl game at Vanderbilt? You need to win the four non-conference games. Normally, you go back and look, four non-conference games, beat Kentucky and find another win or two somewhere in there.
One of those non-conference games, by the way, at Notre Dame.
It's going to be difficult to win all four of them, but they darn sure better win three, and it starts with this one this week.
I heard you talking about this with Tony Barnhart, though, on Saturday. Vandy gets a break in the West. They get Arkansas and Ole Miss, the two teams picked last and second to last in the division, so those are winnable games for Vandy.
In particularly Arkansas, exactly. Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss is going to be a little bit better than a lot of people think, but they're in the West. But, you know, how good is A&M going to be? New coach there. You got a new coach at Arkansas. Arkansas is not going to be very good talent-wise. You know, you got a bunch of new coaches that they're going to be playing against.
Eric is next up for Doug Matthews. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great.
Good. Hold on just a second.
I'm sorry about that. I heard you on the speakerphone.
That's okay.
In the car. Out running some errands. I love listening to the show, guys. This is the first time in a long time I've had a chance to actually call in because I'm usually at work. So
here we go.
I even love listening to Paul every once in a while. So.
Here we go.
Coach Matthews, I had a couple of questions for you. First off, you kind of answered my question about Tennessee's running game earlier. Who do you think is going to be Tennessee's workhorse? Third and two, fourth and one, who's going to be the guy that they're able to give the ball to and be able to get that touchdown?
Good question. I'm going to go off of what Coach Pruitt hadn't been on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think there's going to be one in particular. I think that he will do, because he has the talent to do it at Tennessee right now, probably what you've seen Alabama do. They're probably going to play, he wants to play three in different situations. I would say if it's a pound them, get a first and 10, you know, third and one, fourth and one, third and two, you're probably going to see London in there, the transfer. I think eventually, don't think we'll probably see him this game, you're going to see Jeremy Banks in there, because those are big physical bangers. Then you're going to see Jordan, and you're going to see Ty Chandler in there. I think if they want to get the ball outside, even though they can run somewhat inside, you're probably going to see Chandler in there. If it's a passing down, they're probably going to have him in there to get the ball to, kind of like they did Alvin Kamara. He is the better of that group in catching balls in space and making something happen. But to answer your question, I don't think there'll be just one. It's going to depend on the situation.
Doug, final thing for you. How does Tennessee win this game?
Have to do a great job running the football, just plain and simple. The chance, and they have a great chance, but the chance is going to be we got to dominate the offensive line. And kind of going back to that, listen, I don't care how good or how much improvement West Virginia's made. They don't have anybody that they can line up against Trey Smith. There's not many teams in this league. You start and you build off that. Tennessee's going to be much bigger, much more physical. I don't know how good pass blockers are going to be, but they're going to be able to run the football. And again, a fullback that weighs 260, you're going to see a good bit of, I think, and certainly in running downs, and the tight end position are two things that Tennessee hasn't had for 10 years.
Do you like the decision to start Trey Smith at left tackle?
If that's where they start him, I think they probably will. He'd be somewhere.
That's where he's listed.
Yeah.
I guess they could do whatever they wanted. But
yeah. I think they cross-train everybody where they can move him around a little bit. But that's obviously where they think they need him.
Final thing quickly. How quick of a trigger would you have if the quarterback that starts is not very good early?
I don't think that he'll make a move because he's not very good. I think he'll probably play the second guy, and I think that's probably going to be Chris. I mean, no,
okay,
you know, I think Garantano's going to be the guy to start. But Coach made it very plain. One of the quick things he said, and I'll get to this very quickly. He said this, has said this several times. The guys that are starting game five could be significantly different than the guys that are starting game one. And this is a first game that, you know, you want to see what they can do. I think Garantano will start. I think that's a pretty good assumption. But I think Chris will play probably pretty early also. I know from talking with him, he feels very comfortable with both executing the offense they want to get to. And hey, who's going to hit those big plays down the field? Which quarterback's going to get that big play for me that's going to help win ball games? That's the guy I'm probably going to end up going with.
Doug, thank you.
Good to be here.